So the theme of this week seemed to be some summation, resumation we had yesterday, and today we have summation. So I decided to be, for the sake of this talk, very concrete and just give a few examples in order to highlight the underlying mathematics which go into the solution of the problem. So suppose we, and I should say, I mean, my aim is to try to formulate the problem in such a way that I eventually can teach it to a computer, so that I can put it on a computer. So a lot of these things which I'll be talking about will try to formulate the problem such that we can solve it recursively. As far as the physics motivation is concerned, I think I can skip that part because we have seen already in the past weeks very many complicated mathematical expressions which people try to calculate, so I just try to highlight one approach. So suppose we have a hypergeometric function 2f1 with the following structure: a times epsilon, b times epsilon, and then 1 minus c times epsilon, and some argument x. So something like this is some people might have encountered in the past, and we can write out what it is. So it's a one parameter sum from over n from 0 to infinity, and then we have Pochhammer symbols a epsilon b epsilon sub n divided by c epsilon 1 minus c epsilon sub n, and then we have x to the n over n factorial. Now if you write that down, you have to be able to do the sum. You could also go to the integral representation and then do some tricks and finally get an answer. Of course, we're interested in the Laurent expansion in epsilon, so this is what we are after. This is what we would like to have. So a, b, and c are some positive, negative integers. So they could also be half integers. Yeah, then you have to do some extra work. But later on, but in general they can be, let's first assume they are integers. So the half integer case comes later. So the Pochhammers are defined as a ratio of gamma functions. And so you can stick that in and then you work it out. But let's first look at something simpler. So just look at some over j from 1 to infinity, and then we try to sum x to some power j over j factorial, and then we just take one gamma function j minus epsilon, and if we look at the Laurent series of that object, then we get something like x to the power j over j, sum over j from 1 to infinity, plus the order epsilon term. Actually, there's a minus sign here. Sum over j from 1 to infinity, then we have x to the power j over j, and then we get an S1 harmonic sum of j minus 1, plus the order epsilon squared term, and then, this is not so difficult to do, so this gives you 1 minus 1 of minus log of 1 minus x. And here you get, for the order epsilon term, you get 1 half of log 1 minus x squared plus and so on and so forth. So these things you can sort of do. Now, what you see here is that of course, from the expansion of these gamma functions, you get these harmonic sums, and you get, if you look at the order epsilon term, you see a certain structure which you would like to generalize. So that leads to a generalization of a definition of multiple sums, multiple nested sums, because of course you have seen this definition of the harmonic sums already, that this is basically defined as another sum here. So what you can then write down is general multi-scale sums, which you denote by S, going up to some finite value, say n, and then you have you define certain index field, say m1 to mk, and you define a certain field of variables x1 to xk, and you define this recursively as a sum over I from 1 to n, x1 to the power I over I to the power m1. And then over here you have the nested sum going to I, going up to I, and you've peeled off one index. So it starts at m2 here to mk, and of values x2 going to xk. So this you can write down, and you can x1 to the I. So we just taking the first index and the first variable. And actually, mathematicians like a different definition. So they like the definition of a Z function, which has the same index field, m1 going to mk, and the same field of variables. And now the only difference is if you write down this nested sum, that the Z function here has an upper summation index I minus 1 inside. And then the rest of the structure is the same with the variables and the index field. The point why I'm mentioning this is that it's fairly easy to switch between the two notations. You just peel it off to the end, and then you adjust, and you can go back and forth between this S and Z notation. The thing why I'm mentioning this is that some things are easier to describe in the language of this Z functions, and others are easier to describe in the language of this S functions. And the number theorists who work with multiple zeta values generally look more at this definition of nestedness. Now, when we have done this, we can look what did we get actually? What kind of special cases are included there in this in our definition? So, if we take the z functions at infinity and the index field m1 going to mk and variables x1 going to xk, then we get the multiple polylogarithms of Goncharov, which he introduced like 5 years ago, which have this notation, m1 xk, so just the index field reversed, x1 starting from xk going down to x1. And if we take the z functions at special values for the variables, so with an index field m1 to mk, and here we have all entries equal to 1, then of course we come back to the standard harmonic sums, Euler-Zagier sums, with index m1 to mk. And similarly, if we did this game for the S functions, then we get precisely back the harmonic sums. So here we have these Euler-Zagier sums. Now, if we take these polylogs of Goncharov and again look for special values of these variables, so if we take a special values for the variables and the indices, if we take p minus 1 times 1, and then some power n plus some index n plus 1, and here we take 1 again, p minus 1 times, and here's some variable x, then we come back to the Nielsen integral S p of x, S and p of x, And what else can we get? We can get these harmonic polylogarithms. If we take the polylogs of Goncharov, if we have special values 1 and 1, this precisely k minus 1 times, and the kth variable is some variable x, and then we get a harmonic polylogarithm of index field m1 to mk of variable x, and these are actually then the x-space counterparts of harmonic sums if you have a single scale problem. So the definition looks general enough. The thing about these polylogs of Goncharov is that there is an iterated integral representation in a very similar way as we have an iterated definition of a nested sum, but this is it's rather lengthy, so I don't want to use up all the time, so I skip that part. But you can find a lot of relations which I discuss back if you just look at an iterated integral representation and perform manipulations like integration by parts. So there is some similarity, but let's stick to the sums and see what we can say there further. So the most important feature in practical terms, if you want to put something, if you want to formulate recursive algorithms, is that you have an algebra of multiplication. This was already discussed to some extent by Johannes. So if we look at if we take these nested sums with an index field M1 and so on and so forth, and some variables X1 and so forth, and multiply it with another harmonic with another of these nested sums with an index field M1 prime and variables X1 prime and so on and so forth, then we can write this back into the following object, which will eventually lead us to the fact that we can, applying this procedure recursively, express this product of nested sums in a sum of single nested sums, which of course are then easier to handle again if we want to go in a recursive algorithm through our problem. So what we can do here is we can use the definition and write out the first sum here and there, and then sum back. So what we get is a sum over I from 1 to n. And then we have x1 to the power I over I to the power m1. And then we have from the first sum, this one goes up to I. And now we've taken out the first index, m1 in the first variable. So it starts at m2 and x2. And the second one stays the same with the index field, but it goes up to I. So we have m1 and so on, and variables x1. And then we have another expression here, which goes up to n. And a similar structure with the second sum being the first index taken out. So this goes, this is sum over x1 prime to the power I to the power m1 prime, then si with an index field m1, x1, and here an s of i, m2 prime, x2 prime. And finally, we have another term. This goes with a minus sign. This is I over 1 to n. This is x1 and x1 prime to the power I over I to the power m1 plus m2. And now we have to both sums with the first index taken out. So they go up to I with an index field m2 and variables x2. And m2 prime and x2 prime. Okay, so you see, if you iterate this procedure, then here you build up a lot of nested sums, but eventually the product will vanish and you can sum it back, and then what you get is a sum of single nested sums. So the sketch of the proof is the following, or basically the proof relies on the following identity. You have a sum over I and j going from 1 to n, and you can write this out as a sum over I from 1 to n and a sum over j from 1 to I over this sum function of I and j plus same thing, interchange, a sum over j from 1 to n and a sum over I from 1 to j of a ij, and then minus the sum over I from 1 to n over a ii. And you can sketch this in the plane of I and j such that if you view those as both being running up to some finite value, then you sum over a square like this here on the left-hand side, and you rewrite it such that first you sum over this square here with that term, say, and then you sum over, not really, so we're summing actually over, we include the diagonal on the one-hand side, and we sum over this triangle with the second term, and then finally we have to subtract the diagonal, and we get what we want. Okay, so just as a small example, I think Johannes has also been writing out much more complicated formulas. So if we take it in the language of the z functions, we don't have to worry so much about this minus sign here because it's all pluses. If we take a z function going up to n and index m1, m2, variables x one and x2, and multiplied with a z function of one variable m3, then and x3, then we can work it out what it is, but we can also write it in form of a nice picture. Basically what we have is the following. We have this structure here and this structure. We just draw dots and a line between with variables x1, and then we write it out what we get. We get this structure, x1, x2, x3, plus x1, x3, x2, plus x3, x1, x2, plus two more structures. With an x1 and an x2 times x3 plus an x1 times x3 and an x2. So you can also formulate this whole multiplication as an algebra of so-called rooted trees, because this is what they are. So these are rooted trees without any side branchings. And then if you write it like this, then mathematicians become interested, because these rooted trees can be used as a realization of an Hopf algebra structure, and this is an algebraic structure which is of interest to them. As far as physics is concerned, the interesting coincidence is that from this Hopf algebra, which you get from the multiplication of the harmonic sums, for an Hopf algebra, you need an algebra and a co-algebra. So without going into too much details, but you also know that the combinatorics of the renormalization of UV divergences in the quantum field theory can also be formulated in terms of a Hopf algebra. So this is work by Kreimer and Broadhurst. And the interesting structure is, interesting coincidence is that the co-algebra structures of these two algebras do coincide. So that's a simple observation, but it could mean that there is actually a much deeper connection between the type of functions which we are calculating are and which we use to express our answers, and the Feynman diagrams of quantum field theory. And there is some work in progress in trying to look deeper into this connection. Okay, so I told you that this multiplicative structure is quite important for what we do further. So, but this is not enough. What we, if we want to solve this example, what we have to do is we have to have the following set of algorithms. We have to be able to do the following set of sums, the sum over I from 1 to n, x to the power I, sum divided by I plus some integer offset to the power m. And then we have an harmonic sum of I plus some other offset b and some index field, m1 and x1 and so on and so forth. So this we call the algorithm A. And of course, from the definition, you know exactly that it falls into the, that you can just write it back into the definition of the nested sums which you have. Then the algorithm B, which you need to have, is the following. You need to be able to do sums from over I from 1 to n. With the same structure. Of course, this can always be addressed by ratios of gamma functions, so those I omit because we know that we can expand the gamma functions in epsilon, get harmonic sums, multiply them out, and find back this structure. So this I omit for the sake of brevity. So basically, we repeat those structures here. M1 and variables x1, and then we have some variable y to the power n minus I. So this sum goes to n minus 1, and here we have an n minus I to some power say n1, and some harmonic sum n minus I. Well, this should be an m2, x2, and an n2, and a y2. Okay. So there you see you can't apply, if both I and n minus I are symbolic, you can't apply this trick of multiplying the harmonic sums. So you have to be a bit more careful. And essentially what you have to do is you have to find an algorithm which first eliminates this structure here on the right-hand side, reduces it to that structure so that you can write it back. But this you can do recursively. Basically, you can get rid of those denominators by repeated partial fractioning. And the algorithm also takes care that you systematically reduce the weight of this harmonic sum here, which has an argument structure n minus I, so that eventually you peel off all the nested sums and you can get back to something like this here, where you can actually do the sum. So another algorithm is the algorithm C, which goes from 1 to n minus 1. And this has a power minus 1 to the I and a binomial n over I. And then we have an x1 to the power I divided by 1 to the power m1, and some harmonic sum going up to I with argument index field m2, variable field x2. So you also find sums like this with an alternating binomial coefficient in front. And that actually is some type of a conjugation operation. Because if you apply this this operation twice, and if this is unity, then you can get back the original. So exploiting the fact that this is a conjugation operation, you can also reduce sums of this type to the sum of to the type sums of the type A. And finally, we have the most complex structure. We have sums over I from 1 to n minus 1 with a binomial coefficient x1 to the power I to the power m1, S of I with an index field m2, variable field x2. And then we have, we repeat this structure, the second part of this structure here. So we have a y variable to the power n minus I divided by n minus I to some power n1, and a harmonic a nested sum going up to I with index field n2, variable field y2. Okay, so these are the four basic algorithms which you need in order to not only solve this problem here, because for this problem you actually need only algorithms A and B, but also more complicated ones. And basically the strategy of reduction works this way up. So from D you try to go to C and to B and to A. And this is done in a recursive manner, as I've explained before. A nice thing about the recursion is, and the point is you have defined four types of algorithms, and the point is that with any kind of manipulation on these nested sums and with this algebra of multiplication, whatever the nestedness is, you always get back to some basic configuration and you can start all over again and eventually solve the problem, no matter how many sums you have. So in practice you have for multiscale problems you have like two nested sums. So I'll give you an example what you can do then. If you have harmonic sums, you can go up to 4, 5, and you want this to happen fast, so that basically you don't, it's a black box for you. You just put your stuff in, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. So what you can do now with this with these algorithms are the Laurent expansion of generalized hypergeometric functions of argument field of J plus 1 Fj, which basically put in more Pochhammer symbols, so I don't write that formula out. But you can also have like Appel functions. Which have an argument field A, B1, B2, C, X1, X2, variables X1 and X2. So then you have a double nested sum over M from 0 to infinity and N from 0 to infinity. And you have Pochhammer symbols M1, A of M1 plus M2, B of M1, B2, B1 of M1, B2 of M2, divided by Pochhammer symbol of C of M1 plus M2. And here you have scales x1 and x2 to the power m1 and m2 divided by m1 factorial and m2 factorial. So you see, you get a double sum to infinity. You can turn this with the same trick I written up here. You can turn this into nested sums, and then you for this, for the f1 Appel function, you basically also need only the algorithms A and B, but for the F2 Appel function you also need the algorithm D and C, or you can take Campbell-Fayer functions, things like that. But you can also make up your own functions, which you get somehow in the process of calculating loop integrals, and you just stuff them in and you run them, yeah, and then the algorithm will produce you then the Laurent expansion for this function. So just if we look at what we get for this example here, when we're able to do it all, this is 1 plus epsilon squared, and then you get an AB of Li 2 of x plus epsilon cubed AB of C times Li 3 of x plus A plus B plus C. And here you have an S12 Nielsen function of x plus the order epsilon fourth term, but you can continue. Of course, this is a very trivial example. So more complicated things we had were of this type, or of generalizations of this type. But if you have it as a working as a recursive algorithm, it doesn't really matter, because it will eventually solve that problem. So yeah, I think this was all what I wanted to say. Thank you. I mean, this whole algorithm, if you allow for general access, then you can have essentially multiple scales in a problem, right? So the proof of concept for this approach was for us a calculation of some contribution to the two-loop jet amplitude. So it was E plus E minus go into three jets, where you have something like this here, and then the most complicated thing which we encountered in this proof of concept calculation for the fermionic contribution was something like this here, which, if you look at a scalar integral, gives you a scalar integral of that type, and you have the off-shell lag here, and then you have S, T, U, and the off-shell lag. So that gives you, with a constraint on S, T, and U, gives you two scales. So this is X1 and X2. And then from this, you can cook up the so-called, what I think it was called, C topology in some paper, which essentially comes, which essentially you get from pinching these two lines, and then you get something like this. And for the C topology, we were able to write down a formula, which is, I think it still fits on the page. So I have it somewhere here. So in case somebody wants to look at it, but it is a sum of a type that has essentially these features here. It was just a bit more lengthy. And we had it as an analytic function in all the indices here. And also as an analytic function in the dimension. So for the experts in the field, when you do the tensor reduction, you get shifted dimensions, and otherwise you have to pull them down again. But if you have an analytic function in the dimension, then it doesn't matter, you just calculate it. So we had a set of, like, I think it was like 150 of these integrals, and we all fed them through our algorithm, and we got the answer and just added it up again. So things like this. We tested this multi-scale problem, and for the coefficient function, for this anomalous dimensions calculation, we basically formulate a lot of the integrals implicitly in also in sums like this. We don't have an explicit solution there, but we just let it build up implicitly in the run of the program. But the algorithms which go in there are essentially those four which I've described.
In some problems where you have phase-based constraints, you often get things that are branched over the variables. We found polylogarithms with arguments which are square roots. Do you see any connection of those types of functions to sums? Have you encountered any such things, or do you always get things that are equivalent to harmonic polylogarithms of rational functions of the arguments?
Yeah, that depends a bit on the variable which you use to express your problem. So, I mean, I know cases where you...
Do you believe that you should be able to remove the square root?
I've seen examples where things were formulated in terms of these square roots, but then with some variable transformations, it was possible to remove these square roots and to formulate it in terms of, say, standard variables, but then, or in terms of polylogarithmic functions, but then with standard variables, put it this way, yeah. So there, but I cannot, I mean, I would have to see this. I cannot give you a general statement on that.
There were a couple of examples where the program.
Yeah, I mean, the imaginary part is that, yeah, so if you have an imaginary part, you can take care of that. If you apply this multiplicative structure reversely, then you have to take out all the logarithmic terms, and there you have to be careful about the analytic continuation. But this can be done. So this is.
For example, you know,
It. I mean, this whole algorithm that assumes that, of course, you can that all the xi are between 0 and 1, say, so that you have to do from the outset. So if you are in a different domain, then you have first to look for different variables in order to apply something like this, like doing some analytic continuation. So this. I mean, you know all the analytic continuations for hypergeometric functions, so it's basically something like that. I mean, things become, if you have, in general, if you have masses in the problem, like in loop calculations, then things are a bit different from the massless case, but okay. We do have working code. Actually, we have working code in form, which is author controlled, as it was as it was coined during this conference. And Stefan Weinziel has put out working code as a C++ library, but you have to run GNAC, this free computer algebra system, so that. Essentially, you can code it yourself in C++. So what GNAC does is providing some additional help for factorization, things like that. So if you get that implemented, you can use it and run it. Yeah. So the form version which we have is not public. We plan to put it out, but I didn't have any time. So it's no secret basically. It's just it's not even very large, that part of the code.
Yeah, of course, you generate a lot of things here and to make it part of the public domain.
Oh, sure, yeah, it's. That is planned.
Well for you, and maybe then people call you back for questions.
Yeah.